Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, this is the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today, Belgium dig in to send Ronaldo and co packing, and the Dutch are going home after getting a shock from Schick. Also, can France and Spain hit top form to gain a place in the last eight? And how are the Germans feeling ahead of that huge game at Wembley? This is the Game Euro 2020. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to your podcast. Please, please do leave us a five-star review. And also, of course, make sure you're subscribed to The Times and The Sunday Times. You know the drill. Come on, after all these episodes, go online, search thetimes.co.uk/thegame to start your free trial. And of course, you can get it for less than £1 per day. Joining me today on today's episode, of course, Gregor Robertson, Tom Roddy, how are you?
Hi, Hugh, how you doing?
Not bad, Hugh. A little bit underwhelmed by the knockout football so far, but I'm going to try and keep it upbeat and positive, although it doesn't sound it, I know.
These big names are not delivering. I keep giving them the big sell. Oh, I can't wait for this massive game between these two huge nations, and they've been the worst game so far.
Yeah, the pressure's on, I think.
I'm just pleased to see Schick staying in the competition, because it just seems that social media cannot have enough time to come up with puns with his name.
Is that really a good thing?
I sound a little bit exhausted with it, probably.
Listen, if that is the most that we can take out of today's games, then they must have been dire. You know, a couple of tweets about Patrick Schick's name on social media. Portugal are out. I don't know if they were necessarily underwhelming, though. It was a tense, tight evening in Seville. Plenty of physical and aggressive play in the match. But in the end, Thorgan Hazard's long-distance strike was the difference as Belgium beat the Portuguese 1-0. As I say, it wasn't a classic. Gregor, do you feel like the best team won on the evening?
I think they just about deserved it, Belgium. I think we saw something. You've got to give them credit. You know, I said at the start of the tournament, still had a little bit few question marks about their kind of strength at the back, and there were, you know, some fragility there, I still thought. You know, they held on and they threw their bodies in the line, and there was a real bombardment. To be fair, the last 50 minutes of that game tonight was like excellent tournament knockout football, kind of, you know, throwing the kitchen sink at it. But Belgium stood strong, and I think they deserve credit for that. So I think they just about deserved it, because Portugal...
Did they?
Do you not think so?
No, I thought... I mean, if Diaz's header had been anywhere but the goalkeeper and the opportunity that hits the post, I didn't think... I thought the opportunities that they had on... sorry for the cliche, but on a different day, it would have so easily gone the other way, I thought, anyway.
I think you've named those two chances, and they were their two best chances. But aside from that, there was a lot of half chances. I just think that they didn't really go for it until the last 20, 25 minutes. And, you know, they threw on Fernandes, they threw on João Félix, and they had a little bit more impetus about their play. But they were 1-0 down. I just felt they were really conservative up until that point. And I think Belgium deserved it. Come on then, Tom. What's your state of case for Portugal?
My case for Portugal. I was disappointed with Portugal in the first half, because I thought they allowed Ronaldo to just get isolated, completely isolated up top, and he wasn't in the game at all. And
this isn't really a strong case for Portugal.
It's not. But then I allow me to finish. But then in the second half, they were an entirely different team because they actually completely changed it up. Ronaldo came that little bit deeper. Silva and Jota got closer to him, got further forward, and they were. I thought they were so much better. I agree with you in that. I felt that that was a game for Belgium where this feeling of it being a last chance opportunity. You felt that in the game, and they sort of rode their luck a little bit. But there seems to be a real sort of, I think there's a real fragility there. The one that surprised me the most, though, was actually Vermaelen. I mean, the guy is 35 years old, but he still looked like he was about 29 during that game. I thought he was excellent.
Hasn't played much football in the past 6 years, so he might still be 29 for all we know.
But the run from that performance, the side of the draw that Belgium are in, I would be surprised if they continue to play that way and do get over the line this year.
I thought their passing was more purposeful. There seemed to be more of a plan with the way that Belgium certainly went forward in the game. And I think they showed that they were more of a cohesive unit than Portugal on the night. And I think that was maybe the reason that they just edged it. You know, towards the end of the game, there were a few sort of, you know, two on ones, threes on twos, you know, where if the final ball had been better, maybe if Romelu Lukaku hadn't run himself into the ground in the previous sort of 85 minutes, the final pass might have been there. But I think there were more opportunities for Belgium in that game. You know, the 1-0 felt like to me they deserved it anyway. I'm not sure, but one of the things that I was disappointed with, not just tonight but throughout the tournament, was that Portugal, you know, for all of their huge array of attacking stars, they never really got the best out of them. I don't think at any point in time, look, okay, Cristiano Ronaldo scored 5 goals. I don't think he had a particularly great tournament, I've got to say, but then Bernardo Silva, Diogo Jota, Bruno Fernandes, João Felix, none of them really showed what they can do at this tournament. And Cristiano Ronaldo, despite his 5 goals, for me, falls into that category as well. So who do you blame for that, Gregor? Is it individuals? Is it the manager?
I think it's the manager, largely. I think, as I say, they move the ball really slowly. And there's not much impetus about their play. It is very conservative, and that's, you know, look, that's how they won the competition 5 years ago. And when you've got Ronaldo in your team, you always think there's a chance. And you're right, he didn't do much today. There was the odd little kind of flick, he was getting into dangerous areas in the box, but the ball wasn't really finding him. I agree. I think when you look at the kind of stellar standard of players that they have available to them, and actually the fact that you can't find room for Bruno Fernandes, you can't find room for João Felix. You know, perhaps he's got kind of an embarrassment of riches, and it's a bit like England. I said this the other day. There's always going to be someone that you can point at and say, why is he not playing? Or why is he not being given an opportunity? Or why is he not doing more? Because we know that these are really top level players, and they've not got the best out of them. So I think a lot of that does lie with the manager personally. And it's clear that the slow, turgid pace of their play, that this is the way that Portugal play.
What I wonder as well, you would absolutely have Cristiano Ronaldo in your team, especially in sort of tournament football for the goals he scores. But sometimes, especially nights like tonight, it feels like his presence can be a hindrance, because at times the sort of, you could see the disgust on his face when Bruno Fernandes took a long range shot late on, João Felix's shot that was just went wide, didn't it? That one, and he did not hide his emotions at all. And I agree with you, Gregor. I think a lot of it is down to the manager. And I thought if they'd have played the way they did in the second half, in the first half, where they were poor in the first half, then I think they probably could have beaten Belgium. But at times, it does feel like one of those teams where the manager is the man up front, really.
I agree with you in a way. You know, the element of him being a hindrance is that, for me, maybe over the past, you know, decade, they have relied on him to provide a spark going forward, for him to be that difference maker. Maybe it was a brilliant pass, a piece of skill, whatever it might be. His powers are clearly waning, and it might be fantastic to have an array of talent around him, but I think those players, with the magnitude of his, you know, his career, his reputation, you know, they've almost deferred to Cristiano Ronaldo during this competition. And almost said to him, right, we'll whatever you do, we'll sort of work off. No one took the responsibility away from him to actually grapple with the attack and say, if he's not going to be the person that provides a spark, then it's going to be me, whether that's Diogo Jota or João Felix off the bench. You know, and maybe it's part, you know, you can still say it's the manager. The manager still needs to give them something more. You can't just rely on Cristiano Ronaldo. But it did, to me, seem like the whole outfit, you know, the whole of Portuguese football almost, was so used to Cristiano Ronaldo being the man that they haven't yet realized he's not the same player. And actually, one of these great talents is going to have to, they're just going to have to, over the coming years, you know, take the mantle away from him. I'm just saying, there's no question there. It's just a point that I'm making, really. Portugal did still have 23 shots in the game. Now, that is the most in the tournament without actually scoring a goal. So it could have been down to a fantastic defensive performance from the Belgians. What did you think about their backline, Gregor? I know you mentioned it already, but I think it deserves credit because that was my major concern.
Absolutely. I've certainly been someone who said you're willing to highlight Vertonghen and Alderweireld that are probably past the peak of their powers. Vermaelen, you can say the same about Vermaelen. You know, having Witsel back in front of him is a boost. And Courtois, when he needed to make a save, or when he came out, you know, Silva was, there was a flick from Ronaldo. Silva was into the back post. He was out, pounced on it quickly. That was really good goalkeeping. So, the, you know, they're all big players. I just think that I've just, that's still the one question mark for, you know, about them for me. And I think they showed me something different that I haven't really seen from Belgium before. They have been put under pressure like that before. And with, and, you know, you think back to when they played against Wales and they kind of crumbled really in the last Euros. So there was potential for that to happen tonight, and they didn't do it. So I do think they deserve some credit. I'm not saying that it was a magnificent performance by any stretch of the imagination. It was a kind of a well struck goal, but there's question marks about the goalkeeper, and you know that really was the difference. It swerved in there, and they didn't create many chances. Lukaku was always a, you know, as you said, he was tireless with his running. Sometimes overran it, perhaps, but you got to take the rough with the smooth with Lukaku, and he was, you know, he'd been a nightmare to play against. Wound up Pepe, which I love to see. And so, yeah, when you've got him as your kind of focal point up front as well, when your backs are against the wall, what an asset that is. You know, I think they deserve some credit. Hell, they're through. They definitely deserve credit.
No, they're through. But the best thing about it is they showed us something that we haven't really seen from Belgium in this golden generation, which is grinding out results in the knockout stage when it really matters. They either play brilliantly and dismiss their opponents or they lose. So, you know, for me, it was a big, big step forward, especially as a huge figure in the shape of Kevin De Bruyne went off injured with an ankle injury. And look, it's almost a familiar story now for Belgium, isn't it? Lukaku, excellent. Eden Hazard, maybe back to his best tonight as well. But they can't do this, can they, Tom, if they haven't got De Bruyne, or can they?
They do have the talent there, players to come in. I mean, I do think there's a strange thing in England where we still sort of think of Torgan Hazard as just being the little brother to Eden, but he's got a career, you know, he's got a real career of his own as well, which is, especially in Germany, has been excellent. But they do have a depth of talent. And also, you know, hearing you talk about Lukaku, I completely agree. And I think if they are to do it this year, I actually think Lukaku is going to be the main reason for it, because there is an air about him this summer of total confidence. You know, that was a strong thing to say the other day about I belong in that category of Kane, Lewandowski, Ronaldo. I belong up there. And then even tonight, you know, at the end of the game, the moment with Ronaldo, it's like this sort of meeting of the two protagonists in the team, and this not necessarily a succession, but there's a real air about him that if we're going to do it, I'll do it. I'll lead us there. On De Bruyne, I mean, we saw him leave the Champions League final absolutely devastated. I'm not sure whether this is, I don't think he wanted to risk it. I have absolutely no idea by not being there, but just from what we're seeing, the fact he went out there and just tried, I don't think it's his tournament over or anything like that. And I think they can do it without him.
Also, so Hazard kind of leaving, clutching his hamstring. So, I mean, yeah, maybe one of them. If they lost both of them, yeah, it's a different Belgium team, really.
Just quickly, Gregor, Belgium versus Italy next on Friday night in Munich. Are you expecting a turgid affair?
Well, yeah, Italy let us down a little bit, didn't they? They were the kind of the fans' favourite of the tournament so far, and I thought they were quite fortunate, really, to get past Austria the other night. So, look, I just hope very much that Italy are a little bit more back to what we've seen from them before. Still going to be, you know, so much talent on the pitch, and two teams that kind of, you know, as we say, we've criticised Portugal tonight. We've criticised many teams. They don't really look like they've got a plan. I think both of these teams do look like they have a plan. They're set out, and we see their kind of the system they're playing, and the way they want to try and dominate possession. It's got the makings of a good game, and I really hope it will be, but that doesn't sound like a confident answer, does it?
Got goalless draw written all over it for me, Tom.
Having just said that they didn't deserve to go through, I think they will. not that they didn't deserve to go through, that they were. There was an element of fortune there. I think they'll bring an end to Italy's run. And I think the thing is, they are a side where they've got talent everywhere. It's not like what you saw tonight with Portugal. They just focused on Ronaldo, didn't they? Keep him quiet, and that's all that matters. With Belgium, you just can't do that at all. It comes from absolutely everywhere. I mean, like I said, you expect Eden Hazard to provide it, and his younger brother is the one who gets the stunning goal that wins the game. So, yeah, I see them going through.
Well, it's another great game for us to look forward to, at least on the Game Podcast at Euro 2020. Up next, we will look back at a dreadful day for the Dutch at Euro 2020 before we look ahead to a game at Wembley as well. Plenty still to come. But remember, if you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast from. Well, earlier the Dutch and their dreams at Euro 2020 came crashing down with the shock of the tournament so far. I think the unfancied Czech Republic beat the Netherlands 2-0 in Budapest, and they were totally nullified. They did, though, gain some unenviable records on the way, let's call it that, because for the first time since records began in 1980, the Netherlands failed to record a single shot on target at any game they've played at either a European Championship or a World Cup. Jorginho Wijnaldum completed just 10 passes in the game, the fewest by a Dutch outfield player during the same space of time since 1980. And just for fun, I thought I'd throw this one in. The 4 red cards in Euros history for the Netherlands have been against either the Czech Republic or, as they were formerly known, Czechoslovakia. That's just for good measure. Gregor, what happened to, and I'll say it, your boys, the Netherlands?
It's so disappointing. You know, they too had that big soliloquy about Italy and the Netherlands. Come on, I want to see brave teams win this tournament. And
good luck, Belgium.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, I'm not convinced they would have won with 11 men. I think the Czech Republic deserve a lot of credit. They were really solid and frustrated them, but they offered a threat as well. But there's no doubt that the game kind of swiveled in that little period where Malin went through and missed, and then De Ligt sending off, which was a sending off. You know, there was some doubt about it, but I think it was clearly intentional. Not that matters necessarily these days. It's just that he was the last man, and the Czech striker was going through. So obviously that you know, the game was turned on its head. But from that point, I think you just saw kind of a real soft underbelly in the Dutch team. And you know, they didn't really adapt. They didn't. They just didn't adapt to going down to men. You know, they can often be a way of an opportunity to frustrate the opponents, and they had players like Depay to play on the break, but they really didn't show anything. And I have to say the second goal as well, it was bizarre. Daley Blind was running across, and the ball was cut back, and it was kind of, you know, Schick was kind of 12 yards out, if that, and he didn't even like really attempt to block it. I don't know. Some of them just looked like they kind of, their hearts sunk and their heads, you know, heads fell as soon as they went down to 10 men, and it was in evidence in their play, and really, really disappointing for them to exit the tournament after what had been a really quite promising group stage.
I think they got found out was the truth of it. I agree with you that it was a promising group stage, but they were never truly tested in that group. And I mean, I think also the guy who went off, the fact it was De Ligt, because that first game against Ukraine, when he didn't play, he had, I think it was a groin injury and he couldn't play. And there was such a sort of vulnerability to them. I mean, they went 2-0 up and then totally capitulated and were fortunate to get the late winner. And then you saw De Ligt come in for the second game against Austria, and he just orchestrated everything from the back, was reading everything. He reads the games well. I was just about to say he reads the game so well, and then thought about the highlight of this game tonight, which he didn't read so well. But the fact it was him who was gone, I think that psychologically ruined them a lot. That probably explains a little bit why, as you say, Gregor, that image of them sort of slumping shoulders and almost giving up, because their tournament's been based on creating a lot of opportunities and actually not taking all of them. As you pointed out fascinatingly, Hugh, about Wijnaldum making such few passes.
Incredible.
I wrote last week about how he's so much more creative playing for Holland than he was for Liverpool, playing as that advanced number 10. And it was really interesting to look at, you know, scoring more goals for the Netherlands in, I think it was like 160 less games than Liverpool. But then tonight maybe explains why you put a decent midfield up against it, decent defensive midfielder, and it totally nullifies him. He's not of the calibre of the Bruno Fernandes in that kind of number 10 role.
It's not really a conversation for now, but I thought I would use this point to point out that the players haven't just, you know, been affected by the knockout stages either. The refereeing has fallen off a cliff. I'm not going to get into it now, but I want to mark this because I am sure we're going to be coming back to it later. And it included not sending off Matthijs de Ligt and giving him a yellow card when he was clearly the last man. So I blame the referee for that one. But like I say, we'll come back to the officiating, I'm sure, at some point. At this point, I think I should give the Czechs credit because they have been fantastic in this competition. They just look, Gregor, incredibly tough to beat.
Yeah. I think fantastic's pushing it. I think you're going a bit too much credit there. I still think back to the Scotland game. I would do, obviously.
Comfortable win?
Well, 19 shots to their 10, and we had 60% possession. And like, I thought we were the better team. But again, I would say that. But I think what they have is a really good striker who's had that's had a great tournament. And you're right, they're well organized. I think what we're seeing, and we've seen it in the kind of knockout stage so far, our team's kind of solidly getting through the group stage. And Austria were the same last night. You know, they're solid and well organized, and I think well coached. I think we have to give them credit. And they made life very hard for Austria, made life very hard for Italy, and they made life very hard for the Netherlands today. But they have a threat. They have enough quality to kind of, or, you know, dangers from set piece, things like that. They have enough to get through. And yeah, so they deserve credit. But I personally think that they'll come unstuck against Denmark. I don't think they were. I think they've done brilliantly to get this far, but I think Denmark are a better team than them.
Well, we're just going to put a massive downer on it the day they beat the Netherlands. Unbelievable. And that's a team you talked up as well. Tom Roddy, do you have anything positive to say about the Czechs?
Well, yes, but in the way of tonight, I think they were almost the total opposites to the Netherlands, where there seemed like a freedom to play and in De Boer's team, which wasn't expected before the tournament, an absolute freedom to play, and they were pretty exciting and almost a little bit frantic at times. Whereas the Czechs seem to manage the game really well, and they're just very, very effective. You've got a great sort of core to the team, which actually I think is a similarity to Denmark, which maybe it's because of Gregor getting so excited about the knockouts, which have now disappointed. I'm concerned this game, Denmark against the Czech Republic, is going to be disappointing. Just to tee us up for it to actually be a good one, hopefully.
Hopefully you can work your magic on it. Tom, I know you've been looking at the Dutch team. Frank de Boer, talk to me about him. Is he now on the managerial scrap heap? I mean, what sort of Netherlands manager abandons 4-3-3?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what, you know, this whole, the clamour in this country for Jack Grealish to be playing for England, that is what it was like in the Netherlands for them to be playing 4-3-3 over De Boer's idea for the five. Well, it was more of a three at the back, really. 3-4-1-2. That was what it was like, and probably more some. It felt like he was the only person in the country. But the problem was he kind of got vindicated for it in the group stages because they were exciting and relatively solid and probably the star guy of the team, or one of the sort of emerging names for us, was Denzel Dumfries, who is a little bit erratic, but he worked really nicely as one of those wing backs, and I thought Van Aanholt had a really good tournament as well as a wing back. So I don't actually think he did too much wrong there. It's just one thing I've noticed is how little managers are kind of changing things in games, trying different things, and that was the one thing that stood out. Even with De Ligt going off, I didn't think they tried enough, to be honest. I mean, it got near the end. They send on Weghorst, giant bloke up top, and just go straight to him, which certainly wasn't total football.
Grigor, on the scrap heap, the Premier League's worst ever manager, in the words of Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think Steve Parrish would be calling.
The signs are as he'll be on his way out, and I think, you know, I think a lot of people will be calling for some young blood and dynamism to come into this team. I really enjoyed watching the team. I enjoyed watching most in the group stage, along with Italy, and it's just a really disappointing way for them to go. Because I think, you know, even if they didn't really go out swinging, they kind of folded like a pack of cards, really, when after a bit of misfortune or you know, Delict's error, and that's really a disappointment for them to end.
But there's so much promise there as well, isn't there? There's so much promise that you've got, again, sort of a core of Delict and De Jong, who I thought was brilliant. They just miss a real goal scorer, I think, up front, like a real prolific goal scorer, other than that. So they do need to get it right ahead of the next tournament.
They certainly do, because the Czech Republic are the team that go marching on, and we now know either the Czechs or Denmark will play in the semi-finals of Euro 2020, which for many will be a big surprise. They could face either England or Germany when they get there. The winner of that tie would face Sweden or Ukraine as favourites, we expect, before that semi-final. So ahead of a huge game at Wembley between England and Germany, we caught up with the German side of things. I asked the Times' Konstantin Eckner what the mood was like over in Germany ahead of the match.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more.
That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There are mixed feelings in Germany. I mean, because the team has played decent in one match and played quite badly in another. I mean, meaning the Portugal win, of course, was something positive, but there was also the match against France where you got the feeling that Germany doesn't really have a chance against one of the top teams. And Hungary was also a down match, so to say. So a lot of people, regardless of England being the opponent, I think a lot of people are concerned about Germany being knocked out so early, because there's really the feeling that a team can't compete with the best in Europe right now. So I think that's kind of the general feeling. It's not really concerning England, but just, you know, because England is, of course, regarded as one of the top teams, one of the best teams in Europe right now.
Germany aren't a bad side, are they? I think you're just spoilt. I mean, you've had so many great teams over the years. What's really going wrong with this German team in terms of the perception amongst maybe journalists and fans?
I mean, it's a mix of a couple of things. In the past couple of years, you just saw a team that's, of course, talented, you know, when you look at the individuals that are in the team. But you can also see a team that might lack a few of the, you know, parts of the recipe you need to really succeed again. Meaning, you know, the team doesn't really have a center forward. The team might not have the kind of leaders you need. I mean, looking back at 2014, winning the World Cup, you got a couple of leaders like Schweinsteiger, Philipp Lahm, and so on. And you also got a center forward at the time, Miroslav Klose. So, and the team is talented around a couple of positions, attacking midfield, center back positions, fullback positions. But you lack a couple of ingredients you probably need. And also, in the past few years, the team and the German FA in general, they haven't presented themselves in the best light. There have been some marketing campaigns that didn't really work out. Some things look very and appear to be very artificial, how the team is presented, how it wants to be portrayed in the public. And fans can't really connect with the team right now in a way that happened in the past when just, you know, people were proud of the German team, even if the German team didn't win at a big tournament or something, but they were at least proud and they were into it. And then right now they aren't as much as they have in recent hour and past times.
We England fans feel your pain on that one. We haven't connected with the squad for a while, but things are slightly better since 2018 for us at the moment anyway. Listen, looking ahead to the game, how do you expect the German manager, Joachim Löw, to play in the match? Will there be big changes?
One thing we have learned from the group stage is that Löw doesn't make big changes and he doesn't really adjust his tactical system to the opponent. He basically just lets the team play the same things over and over again, regardless of who the opponent is. I mean, if you look at the three matches they had so far, it basically looked the same, especially in possession. You know, you saw these diagonal balls, you saw some of these switch plays, and you saw how slow possession in their own third or in their own half. And I think it won't change against England. What Löw wants to do is establish sort of dominance with a lot of possession, 60%, 65% or so, if England allows Germany to have so much possession, but at least that's the approach. And then either playing down the field through the middle through Toni Kroos and Ilkay Gundogan as the playmakers, or maybe playing diagonal balls to Robin Gosens, the left back, or Joshua Kimmich, the right back, which worked out great against Portugal, but it didn't really work against Hungary and France. So there's also a question to be asked. But in general, I mean, I have a couple of ideas what Löw might or should do against England, because I see a couple of weak spots. Problem is that I don't really expect him to really make big changes. I mean, the only thing he might do in terms of changes, maybe bringing in Leon Goretzka as a midfielder, maybe instead of Ilkay Gundogan, or maybe instead of one of the attacking players, to just have Gundogan as a physical force against Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice. And Gundogan, Goretzka played quite well against Hungary when he came in.
What do you see, just quickly on that, what do you see as England's major weaknesses?
I think what you have to do is, because, I mean, especially looking through the German lens and looking through you know, what the German team can do with, you know, not having a center forward and so on. I mean, there's some caveats there. But what you should do is you have to basically overload the space around and behind Phillips and Rice. So you got Kai Havertz as... who plays in the middle, who basically plays as a false number nine. So he drops back a little bit and he picks up a lot of passes that, you know, go right next to the opposing center midfielders. So he does that. I mean, he might be neutralized by Rice, for instance, or maybe Phillips. So you need another center, another attacking midfielder who then comes down the field and basically, you know, uses some of the space that's then created by Phillips and Rice, focusing on Havertz and maybe Thomas Müller. So Goretzka might be the guy to, you know, have this box-to-box style, who's then basically leading the second wave. That's something you should do. And also what you also do have to do is against England is once you lose possession high up the field, you not only have to, you know, just counter-press, but you have to shut down the passing lanes to Raheem Sterling and Jack Grealish, or on the other side, maybe, I don't know, Foden, for instance, you know, whoever plays on the wings for England. And there are a couple of options, of course. So you have to shut down these passing lanes instantly. So because what England tend to do is when they win the ball, they play down the channels. And they might do, especially against Germany, because the fullbacks or the wingbacks, Kimmich and Gosens, are so high up the field. So you have to shut them down instantly, so you can regain possession immediately and then, you know, start a counterattack yourself, use the momentum for yourself. And that's something you can do against England. Yeah, that's just a couple of ideas, you know, but, and that's discussed, yeah, you know, among experts in Germany, but I'm not sure. As I said, we are a little bit down on Joachim Löw right now.
I find that absolutely fascinating though. So thank you for telling us how the enemy lines, behind enemy lines, how you guys are thinking about the England team. I'll have to pass it on to Gareth Southgate, but those were maybe the facts ahead of the game, the scientific part of the sport that we love, but feelings, emotions come into it as well. The rivalry between England and Germany is huge on the English side of it. I don't know what it really is like on the German side of it, but do you think it's just about time the English fans let it go?
Of course not. I mean, rivalries are great, especially in international football. I think you need something like that, because you don't have the typical derbies or something. You know, you don't have the Arsenal against Tottenham in international football, but you need something, a substitute, basically. But since 66, you know, the Germans won most of the matches. And I think they valued the rivalry still, because it's a great rivalry. It's two traditional football nations. And I think the English also should value the rivalry and also should get some wins back, because the Germans have been so dominated over the years. I mean, you know, you have to be into it a little bit too. I mean, otherwise you just, you know, get complacent, and why would you? I mean, and maybe you get one win back in this round of 16 match, because I think from the German perspective, England looks like a slight favorite. I know that it might surprise some people, but from the German perspective, it looks like that.
Our thanks to Konstantin, which means we haven't got much time left on the game podcast. Just a quick look ahead to the games coming on Monday. Croatia versus Spain in Copenhagen, and France back in action, the world champions once again taking on Switzerland. Let's start with the Croatia versus Spain game very quickly, Tom Roddy. What are you expecting to see from Spain against Croatia? This could be a great tie, I think. You know, two teams with quality, but plenty of imperfections.
Yeah, exactly. The one worry is that it becomes that sort of midfield battle a little bit, because they are so, both teams are based all around their midfield. I mean, Spain seems to have a complete team of them, and of course we saw the criticism, more than criticism, the abuse of Morata, which you don't condone at all, but that can't sort of stop us from critiquing his game. And they have been one of the teams who have just wasted opportunities and Croatia could start to build momentum after a really sort of, I thought, an underwhelming group stage. And they really miss Mandzukic, I think, this year. They're not that far off where they were 3 years ago. They just really miss Mandzukic.
I fancy Croatia still. I think there was a bit of hype over Spain after the 5-0 win over Slovakia, but Slovakia were woeful. You know, the floodgates opened. They were gifted 2 goals by Dubravka. Some of the defending was just, you know, calamitous. And yes, that will boost them. That will give them a big lift. I'm just not sure they've that kind of enough penetration in their team, really. And there was that stat, they think they made 2,129 passes in their 3 group games, which was 13% more than any other country. I didn't think they were much great to watch either. You know, they were kind of, a lot of that was pretty ponderous. And as I say, they were just lacking that kind of cutting edge. And yes, Morata is someone who's devoid of confidence, and I would love to see him get a goal. But I think after Croatia's performance against Scotland, again, I probably would say this, I think they really stepped it up, and I think Croatia will be a force to be reckoned with.
France against Switzerland then. I'm looking forward to seeing more from France, but reports over there suggests that people expect Didier Deschamps to change his formation to a 3-5-2, another team who might be playing with three at the back at Euro 2020. Gregor, do you think he should change?
No, not really. I think that they have a pretty kind of tried and tested system. It's the way that they've done things for many years now. And, well, we've said many times, you know, over the last couple of weeks that France are a team you really want to see spark into life, and you want to see their best players really thriving. And I think aside from Pogba, that's not really been the case. It's been effective. It's got them this far. It's won them trophies. It's won them World Cup. I still think they have enough kind of stardust in their team, and particularly in Mbappe to get the goals that they need. And if they can keep it tight at the back, then I still see them as favourites. And it's not been brilliant to watch, but it's been effective football. And I think really it would be pretty surprising to see them try to change that at this point in the competition.
Tom, can Switzerland stop them?
They're better than the sum of their parts, really, but I don't think so. Maybe if they do go to a three at the back, maybe if Deschamps does go to a three at the back, then yes, they can stop them, because I just think that would be a pretty unwise decision in the first knockout stages of a European championship. I mean, I find it quite ironic that we spent the first week before the tournament discussing England and saying we don't know what the team is going to be, who's going to be in the side, and look at France. Everyone knows what it's going to be. They're so effective, and they've got taking momentum into a tournament with a side that is tried and trusted and completely effective. And then it gets to the first round of the knockout stages and he thinks of changing it. I mean, that makes no sense to me. Maybe tomorrow night you'll be talking about how it's worked wonders.
Possibly we will be. I'll tell you what, I'm going to stop telling people to tee up who they think might win the next day, because it is not going great for us in terms of the prediction. So tonight we will just leave. We'll just hang it out there. Let's see what happens. We'll see you in 24 hours. Tom Roddy, Gregor Robertson, thank you so much for being with me on this episode of The Game Euro 2020, and for all of you for listening as well. Thank you. Remember, if you're enjoying all of our content across Euro 2020, then make sure you're subscribed to The Times and The Sunday Times right now. You'll get more great stories from the big names we brought in for the summer, and of course our journalists all across Europe right now. Just go online, search thetimes.co.uk/the game to begin your free trial.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.